My Lords, question
for short debate on support for persecuted Christians around the world. Baroness Foster of Aghadromsey.
Lords, and firstly I want to thank all those who have put their name out to speak in this debate tonight on this important but unfortunately largely ignored issue of the global persecution of Christians. And I, of course, also want to thank the noble Lord, the Minister, for being here to respond to the short question. My thanks also go to all those who have contacted those listed to speak tonight for the various briefings which have been put together. The truth is, we probably have enough material on this issue to speak for a very long time this evening. The matter is an expansive one, but we are constrained by the time limits set and should endeavour to respect those. And in an effort to comply, I will cite specific examples of Christian persecution to point out the trends I wish to cover rather than try and deal with every country on the watch list. That would be impossible. And whether through serendipity or divine intervention, I can think of no better time than Holy Week to bring this issue to the attention of the House. The Bible tells us that this was the time that Jesus suffered greatly, both physically and mentally, knowing the death he would face on Good Friday. And so it seems very appropriate, my Lords, to focus on the great suffering that continues to Christians across the world today. In January of this year, I, along with many other MPs and peers, attended the launch of the 2024 Open Doors World Watch List here in Parliament. The noble Lord, the Minister, was there as well. And every year, this organisation compiles a report which sets out the 50 countries where it is most dangerous to be a Christian. This year, the research found that more than 365 million Christians suffer high levels of persecution and discrimination for their faith. That's around 1 in 7 Christians worldwide. Now, for those of us living in the United Kingdom, it can often feel as if our faith is not respected and indeed often belittled, even though we have an established church here in England and Wales. And as Christians in the UK, we may feel marginalised, but to hear that our brothers and sisters in Christ are persecuted for their faith in the manner which was outlined was frankly shocking. And yet, there is very little spoken about, never mind acted upon, such persecution, and that's something that needs to change. Back at Christmas in 2018, the then Bishop of Truro, now the Lord Bishop of Winchester, was asked by the then Foreign Secretary, Jeremy Hunt MP, to carry out a review into the global persecution of Christians, to map the extent and the nature of the persecution, to assess the quality of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office response, and finally to recommend changes in policy and practice to deal with the issue. Now, the comprehensive final report, which was published in June 2019, noted that the problem was indeed a global phenomenon. It said that the Western response to the problem, however, was no doubt tinged by a certain post-Christian bewilderment, if not embarrassment, about matters of faith. There was, the report, a consequential failure to grasp how, for the vast majority of the world's inhabitants, faith is not only a primary marker of identity, but also a primary motivation for action, both good and ill. My Lords, religious persecution occurs to a third of the world's population in some form, with Christians being the most persecuted group, even though freedom of religion and belief is a fundamental human right. And to make things worse, global persecution of Christians is underreported and therefore is not highlighted and responded to in an adequate way. The geographical spread of anti-Christian persecution and its increasing severity was noted by the Truro report. Indeed, in some regions, the level and nature of persecution was arguably coming close to meeting the international definition of genocide, according to the definition of the United Nations. The main impact of persecution, apart, of course, from the individual suffering, is the internal displacement and exodus from various parts of the world. And as we come to celebrate Easter in the Christian calendar and all the events which took place in Jerusalem in that Holy Week, we should be paying more attention and doing something about the fact that Christianity now faces being wiped out in parts of the Middle East, where its roots go back the furthest. In the birthplace of Christ, Christian numbers are at 1.5% of the population. Now, understandably, we've heard much about the plight of our Jewish friends in the regions, and indeed the plight of all those living in the region, but rarely do we hear about the Christian minority, that tiny Christian minority, who are struggling to be heard, let alone helped. In Iraq, the population of Christians has plummeted from 1.5 million to now just over 100,000. Christianity, which has provided much-needed plurality in the region, is disappearing. And apart from the tragedy which that is for those Christian communities, it also has a destabilising impact on the Middle East. I wonder if the noble Lord, the Minister, who has great expertise and experience in this area, could comment on that aspect in particular when he makes his remarks. In the Truro report, it was said that government needs to give priority and specifically target support to Christian communities. This was, according to the report, not just necessary, but urgent. And given that recommendation from the report, again, perhaps the noble Lord, the Minister, could update us on any specific action which has been taken on the back of that report, given that it's nearly 5 years since the publication. The issue of stability and security was a theme explored by the Open Doors launch this year. The title of this year's report was "The Cost of Collapse and the Cost of Control." And the report indicated that under the cover of state fragility and failure, violence against Christians has intensified in many parts of the world, whilst elsewhere, autocratic countries also increase their control. By way of example, in terms of state fragility, as sub-Saharan Africa becomes more unstable, religiously motivated violence is intensifying. In 18 out of the 26 sub-Saharan countries, 4,606 Christians were killed because of their faith during the 2024 reporting period. And the growing violence is causing a displacement crisis as more and more Christians are forced to flee their homes. Of great concern to me is that this displacement of Christians is also happening in India, where more than 62,000 Indian Christians were forced to flee their homes during the 2024 reporting period. Now, that's a huge jump from 380 in 2022 and 834 in 2023. And that's something I'm sure Her Majesty's Government are very concerned about, and I look forward to hearing the observations of the Minister in this regard about a region we both care deeply about. A subsection, if I may describe it as such, of the persecution of Christians is the treatment of Christian women. Put simply, Christian women are more likely to be the victims of discrimination and persecution than their male counterparts. That could be through people trafficking, gender-based violence, kidnapping, forced marriage, and the list continues. This double marginalisation, being a woman and being a Christian, is again underreported, as women are often invisible in such societies and poorly represented. For example, there is evidence from Pakistan of Christian girls being groomed, trafficked into sham marriages, and then forced to convert to become Muslims. And I welcome the fact that the International Development White Paper commits the UK to development policies which are inclusive of people marginalised for their religion and belief. As I said earlier, freedom of religion and belief is a key human right, but sadly ignored in many parts of the world, especially those areas of conflict. We have a proud history of promoting religious freedom here in the United Kingdom, and therefore we should be doing more to promote it across the world. For me, freedom of religion is almost a passport to securing other human rights, such as freedom from fear, the right to family life, and the right to privacy. If freedom of religion is not protected, then other rights will be overlooked and ignored as well. We talk a lot in this House about creating foreign policies to aid stabilisation, conflict resolution, and, importantly, reconciliation. And surely such aspects of our foreign policy must recognise the needs of religious minorities in formulating conflict and stabilisation policies. In conclusion, I urge the Minister to implement those recommendations of the Truro report which remain outstanding. In particular, I look forward to the Government establishing the role of the Prime Minister's Special Envoy on Freedom of Religious Belief into statute to add and to underline the excellent work carried out by Fiona Bruce MP. Also, there is a real and urgent need to include mandatory religious literacy into the training of all FCDO staff. For me, this is particularly important given that, sad to say, we cannot take for granted that our civil servants have a working understanding of Christianity anymore. And in doing so, we also need to recognise that there is, according to the Truro report, a reluctance from some diplomats to raise the issue of Christian persecution for fear of upsetting local administrations. I'm bound to say, my lords, that there does not appear to be that reluctance when it comes to other issues which may cause offence locally. And I would hope that the Minister could comment on how diplomats and staff in the Foreign Office in general can be better equipped to deal with these complex but urgent issues. And once again, I want to thank all who are going to contribute. I do hope that the UK can, as recommended in the Truro report, take on the role as a global leader in articulating freedom of religious belief.
Yeah. My Lords, it's a privilege to follow the noble Baroness Lady Foster of Ardrumsea. And I just want to offer a few reflections of my own. When I was growing up, sort of in the 60s and 70s, I sort of felt that we'd reached a point where religious persecution had come to an end. On the whole, you know, there was no persecution, and certainly in the West, of Christian belief. So I was rather surprised, I think a lot of people were, when John Paul II was elected Pope in 1978, as I recall, and quite quickly sort of expressed a world view in which he saw the church as being still subject to persecution. It took some time to think that through, really, because I suppose it's the case that if you grew up in Poland, you would see things rather differently from the way I saw things growing up somewhat later than John Paul II. If you see the persecution of the church by Nazis and then later, of course, under communism, you would have a very different view. And famously, of course, he created an astonishingly prodigious number of saints during his time as Pope, many of them martyrs of the 20th century, and I think that spoke very strongly to him. So one needs to see this in a broader sense. Now, while the noble lady has spoken largely of persecution in the Third World, if one is still correct in referring to it as the Third World, by contrast, I'd rather speak a little bit about persecution of Christianity in the West, because the persecution that John Paul II was familiar with growing up abated considerably as a result of the fall of the Iron Curtain. But it doesn't mean it's gone away. In fact, it's present in Europe in a new and virulent form and has spread west. So that what we see now is a very large number of attacks on churches in Western Europe, prodigiously in France in particular, but also in Germany and in Spain. We've even seen priests murdered in their churches in France and in Spain in the last few years. 852 hate crimes were identified in Europe in 2022 by the Vienna-based Observatory on intolerance and discrimination against Christians, attacks on places of worship, symbols and institutions. That represented a 44% increase. Arson attacks against churches were up by 75% in 2022. Again, in Europe, this was. When we look at other parts of the West, it's salutary to turn briefly to Canada, where 100 churches in the last, mostly Catholic church, all Catholic churches, I believe, in the last few years have actually been torched and burnt to the ground. Now, that arose from a story that the Catholic Church had been involved in the past in some form of creating mass graves of native children. And that led to a very considerable level of hostility, which expressed itself in these church burnings, though it seems to be the case on closer examination that the evidence to support those claims has been greatly exaggerated, should we say, at the very, very least. But this is in Canada. This is in a Western liberal country. And when we turn to the United States, we find that, according to the US Conference of Catholic Bishops, 341 incidents across 43 US states since May 2021. This is just Catholic churches. There are also incidents of attacks against African American churches and Protestant churches, but certainly against Catholic churches. There have been at least a dozen or so of those that you can find by Googling it on Wikipedia. It's quite curious in the way we think about these things that when I typed into Google looking for some of this evidence, I typed in the words church attacks USA. I got back something that said, did you mean church attacks us? Which sort of made the assumption that actually it was the church doing the attacks on us rather than the churches being attacked in the USA. I thought that showed a certain form of bias. Now, it's important to think where these attacks are coming from. And certainly in France and possibly in other parts of Europe, they appear to be associated with Muslims, very often illegal immigrants or people who are in a state of uncertainty, who are not settled in that local society. And that seems to be the case there. In Canada, as I say, they appear to be associated with stories about mass graves of native children. But in the United States, I touch on a sensitive point here perhaps, in the United States, they appear to be correlated with arguments about abortion and seem to be coming from what might be called a certain strand of liberalism that is attacking the churches. And that's one of the things that concerns me very greatly, because that is something relatively new and is a matter of very considerable concern. Now, we have been free of that, but what starts in America ends up here. Indeed, as an aside, I might say that apart from Brexit, I can hardly think of a single original idea that we have produced in Britain that we haven't imported from the United States in the last 30 years. I hope it won't happen here, but we need to be wary because these culture war issues have clearly generated attacks in the United States, and this could come in this direction. Finally, we badge our efforts, our international efforts, on this subject under the term freedom of religion or belief. That is what we advocate and that is what we fight for, to a degree at least, and my noble friend the Minister is, I'm sure, going to answer the question posed by the noble Baroness as to the extent to which the Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office does that. But that is what we do when we do it. We badge it as freedom of religion or belief. Now, that is a legal and philosophical principle. It is, in its own terms, wholly admirable, but it is also universal, and it does not reflect or recognise the particular cultural heritage of this country, which indeed is a Christian heritage, as evidenced by the presence of bishops on the benches over here. I would only ask, if it's the wrong question to ask, possibly, but I would ask, is it too much that we might actually see ourselves not only as international advocates of that universal principle, but also as particular defenders of Christianity in the rest of the world?